an individual and personal deed of greatest importance, the deed of Lao Tse, the deed of Buddha, though they are later than Homer. But they were isolated from this beginning Greek culture. Abraham, Zarathustra, all great personalities that broke with mythical conditions entirely and discovered a free way of human thinking in their different fields. They all were outstanding personalities in the literary sense of the word, namely outstanding from their culture, from their civilization, from their myths, from their heritage, outstanding to a degree never since conceived by us. Of course, every genius, so to speak, everybody who makes one next step is in the tragical situation to become outstanding for a while. He might even be driven into a position to which Abraham could have been or must have been most apparently driven, namely a situation where he realized that nobody was thinking like him. And that means to get the suspicion that one is crazy. The danger of madness that everybody runs who makes such a step, of suddenly not being able to believe anymore in what he thinks and what he discovers, because apparently nobody else can see it, is a terrible condition of the human mind. Abraham overcame it. We do not know how those people we are talking about overcame it. How Buddha overcame it is told to us in the legend. A god had to come to tell him that he should teach, because he was desperate, thinking, who can understand this crazy fundamental thought I have, namely the thought that the self is not what we formerly thought, that the self is not a cosmical power, that the self is merely human power. To contradict one's whole age in such a way is most dangerous. They all did a step like that, and it was the greatest step. Every genius does a little step like that. That does neither mean that the later creators are less, nor does it mean that those we are talking about are people who got their thoughts from thin air or out of blue heaven. They come out of their tradition too. And they took a lot of their tradition along. They did not only deny, they reasserted too, but in a new way and in a much mightier than the others. All of them were concerned with the discovery of man, namely of man now as an outstanding being, as a being outstanding from the cosmos, from nature, from the world, as they themselves were forced to be outstanding personalities, so they were it, for the reason to discover that man is an outstanding being in the world. And they all, in their ways, their different ways, discovered this same thing. This deed, which is the greatest I can conceive of in the development of the human mind, which those nine people did, and what makes them so outstanding in all history of humanity, might perhaps never have reached our knowledge. We might have had to do it all over again. If there hadn't been a people, a whole people, that as a people so split off in different nations, so to speak, polis, different little states, made it his aim to become the outstanding people. There has another one been that made it his aim to become the outstanding people, the chosen people, in a religious way. Both peoples, the Hebrews and the Greeks, are the ones that carried in their culture and in their national enterprises, their cultural and civilizatoric national enterprises, the very fundamental idea of this being outstanding, that man is this outstanding being. They are, in a broader sense, the first receptacles for those great thoughts of those great people we are considering here. They received them well. They lived this way, and they carried or built a tradition that watered down or spoiled as it might have been through the ages, was enough to last. And within that tradition, the thoughts of those thinkers, though mostly forgotten, we are reconsidering now, have been preserved. So the Greeks are one of those people, and they, being an artistic people, we have seen that they are this funny people that was ready to accept two books of art, the Odyssey and the Iliad, as a basis for a religion they believed in for centuries. They did not only see apt to do so. We can suspect them that they might have been liable not really to believe in any other kind of religion which would not have had a poetical foundation. So eager they were for art. Their whole culture is based on art, centered around art. So Homer has become the founder of their religion and their educator. Becoming the educator of Greece, Greece became the educator, Hellas became the educator of the West. And so Homer had more influence as an educator on us than we suspect. Being an artist, and his people becoming an artistic people, fulfilling this or showing us that this promise that slumbers in all of us, namely that all of us can also become artistic men, poetical human beings, poetical men, they showed us how to do that. Their art now is almost entirely built on Homer's art. We do not see any other essentially Greek influences. The coinage that Homer gave to Greek art is such a definite one that the Greeks from then on can afford to steal, to take over almost all elements of different musical cultures and arts that are in their surroundings. Egyptian, Mycenaean, everything they can get hold of, and transform it at once. Early Greek sculpture shows statues of Hera, for instance, the goddess Hera, and many other gods, which at the first look resemble the stiff and earth-bound to the center of the earth statues of the Egyptians, tremendously. But the second look already reveals that they are entirely different. There is already this being apart, not only from the center of the earth, from the earth itself, from their surroundings, from everything expressed in those earliest archaic statues, in the development of sculpture to the classical height, we see this trend prevailing more and more. The freestanding statue is the creation of the Greeks. And this freestanding statue, that their column is too, the column's freestanding statues carrying the temple, standing together, but standing freely together, as free personalities, so to speak, every one of them outstanding. This cultural coinage of Greek art symbolizes a very bad word, manifests, expresses the fact of this liberation of man who asks for the first time, who am I? I, the outstanding being in the world, who am I? Here we have the manifestation of it in art. Now all Greek art then centers around sculpture. The sculptural element you find in the expression of Homer already, the Greek dramatists later, relief art, architecture, the Greek theater with its statue-like actors. Everything centered around the freestanding human figure. Everything underlining this very fundamental fact. The man who saw the world first this way is Homer. His use of cultural means in order to bring out every statement, every vision of the world in a way that is three-dimensional, in a way that makes the statement or the figure or the metaphor outstanding and standing forever, like the metaphors in all Homer's chapters are. The repetition of them, you hear always the dawn described in the same words, the cows described in the same words, this eternal recurrence of metaphors makes for this plastic quality that sets itself into our mind and makes the vision of the whole world, the description of the whole world that Homer intends, so absolutely static for us in the end. It all comes out clear like statues, and we remember it better than most other art. This quality, this cultural quality, so to speak, embodies the general human quality of the self-discovery of man as an outstanding being that was going on in all this time we are describing here from, let's say, 1600 BC till the year 1, when this age closes. The center expression of this age is given artistically in Greek art. Now art, again, let's try to describe it in a metaphor which itself does not pretend to be more than a metaphor. There is a Talmudic story where the Talmudists broke their heads what God's occupations are. God, like we, has 24 hours at his disposal. We have to sleep 8 hours of those 24 hours. God has not, because God doesn't sleep. So how does he occupy himself in those 3 times 8 hours he has at his disposal? And they say, found out, is there Chochme, that 8 hours he considers and ponders and thinks out the law. 8 hours he governs the world, and 8 hours he plays with the Leviathan. The Leviathan is a big whale he created in the beginning. Leviathan. 8 hours he is playing with this big monster, the Leviathan, which is almost the whole world, this big monster. So to speak, the center of all natural creation. Well, I always thought, or since I had knowledge of this story, I always thought that a specific art, namely music, has made it possible for us to witness those occupations of God by hearing them. Namely, if we listen to Bach, then we hear God pondering the law. If we listen to Beethoven, then we hear God governing the world. And if we listen to Mozart, then we hear God playing with the Leviathan. In a sense, this playing with the Leviathan is exactly what men tried to do by creating myth in order to go away, to get away from this original fear of the ununderstandable world. When he created myths by artistic capability, he was already trying to play with the Leviathan. And this playing with the Leviathan is really what all artists do, and what we do forever, because we have to play with the Leviathan. And it is here, as usual, that if we think hard and take every proposition that men have made in order to describe the qualities of God, we have never gone farther than by that to describe and discover our own qualities. We have never yet been able really to envisage a quality that would be higher as ours. So we seem to be the one who have to ponder the law, who have to govern the world, and who have to play with the Leviathan. Playing with the Leviathan we have to in order to gain new strength, in order to lose our fear for the other occupations we have. And again, we are back to the necessities of living in art and living with art, becoming artistic persons, in order to be able to play a little bit with the Leviathan, in order to survive. Homer's outstanding deed in art, namely, to take the opposite position and to work freely with myths in order of working for myths, having misworking for him and the purposes of his art. This entire turnabout, this absolute transformation in the relation of myth and art, brought with it the claim of Homer, which makes him again the father of poetry. The claim that the artist is a world builder in imagination. And Homer, for the first time, tries to give us in his works a whole world, to assemble a whole world, to leave nothing out which he knows. So in a way, there is also, as in myth, and that is the nearness of his work, his artistic work, which is entirely artistic, yet contains so much of myth transformed and is so near to myth still, that this artistic work has especially, more than other artistic works, even the ones of Sophocles and Shakespeare, which are nearest to his in significance, has more than them. In itself, all the other creative capabilities of men, as myth had. So I think the Greeks were not so naive that we can smile upon them when they thought and said and lived accordingly, that Homer knew everything. This impression is given again and again by every great work of art. I remember a friend of mine telling me she had listened to a performance of Wanda Landowska playing Bach, and she was explaining Bach in her Russian voice, and she said, Bach knew everything. Yes, Bach knew everything. Homer knew everything, said the Greeks, and the Greeks took his works not only as their Bible first, in order to find out how they should communicate with their gods, what they should do to please their gods. They took it also in order to find out what they should do best in agriculture. They studied it in order to find out how human relations might best be done. They studied it in order to learn strategy from it, military strategy and tactics. Alexander the Great still did that. Honestly. So I hope we can understand it a little. It's again the legend of the blind man who sees everything, because he senses everything and knows everything. This happens in much later time again. Napoleon I said that he would have made, if Racine, the French dramatist, had lived at his time still, he would have made him a duke. Because as far as politics and even military matters, but mostly politics go, Napoleon claimed to have learned most from Racine. And he was quite serious. Now, here is magic, we only have to believe it. The magic of art. A great statesman who is creative in his own matter. A scientist who is creative in his own field. A genuine erotical person who is creative in his own field. If they read those works, then they are taken into the very atmosphere of their fields. And they have better ideas about their own matters than they had before. Those ideas are not there in Homer. They are not there in Shakespeare and Racine as ideas, as truths. Yet they are there as significance in this Apollonian sense we have analyzed, he neither reveals nor conceals. He signifies. The utmost human significance of all those fields and occupations is there in art. And somebody who knows it and is in those fields creative, his creativeness will be strengthened. And he will feel compelled to ascribe what he learned from himself, being inspired by the artist. He will be ready to ascribe that to the artist. Yes, he has been inspired. Because this is the only human field we know where inspiration is possible. As well as there is a rest of magic in art, as well as Kant is right when he wants to preserve the expression genius only for the poet, the artist, as well it is true that intuition, which is a capability of the human mind, that only via the capability of imagination comes to help in other fields. A man, a lover, a philosopher, a statesman, a scientist, they all are lost without imagination. And via imagination, coming to their help, a little bit of intuition comes to their help where intuition most is needed. Not that they could rely on intuition. If they do, woe to them. Only the artist can rely on intuition. Not if we work in other capacities can we entirely rely on intuition. But woe to us also if intuition does not come to our help. If we lack imagination even in the other fields of our occupation and intuition does not help us. And intuition will help us more and more the better we others go in for living with art, because in art there is inspiration. The artist inspires us, and that is perhaps our only reasonable proof, though it is not a proof, but at least a parallel or a probability that we could put forward in order to maintain with Plato or Socrates mainly and with Nietzsche that the artist is slain by madness by Apollo, with madness by Apollo. That means that he himself is inspired by a higher source of inspiration. Since we do not find, if we analyze, this source of inspiration in ourselves, even in the artistic personality, much as the artists tried to find this source, they find only its secondary source.